The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and thanks so much for joining me for another episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood from climate strategy company Resilience Limited, and Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Well, today we have another great episode. We actually have a further interview with Daniela Ramirez, who is in Brazil for COP30. Last week we had a great interview, and this is a continuation of the same discussion into a second interview. And this time we will be covering a few other things. We'll be talking more focus on local government and what is known as subnationals, how they're expected to have a stronger role. We'll look at problems of continuity across election periods in local government as mayors go out and mayors come in, a much bigger problem in other parts of the world, and we had it bad enough as it was. Issues Daniela will explain regarding equity in accessing NGO funding for climate initiatives. She'll discuss the role of C40, that is an international organization of major councils, processes for de-risking projects and making them, as she calls, bankable, and then other options for funding climate initiatives, such as a particularly interesting development at Portland, Oregon. And then we'll close with Daniela's wish for the COP30 outcomes. And I'm just reading back to Daniela one of the comments that she had made to me in some briefing notes for our discussion. There's a noticeable shift from national level negotiations to empowering local and regional governments who are on the front lines. You've talked a bit about that already, but I'd be really glad if you wanted to go into that in more detail.
For sure. I met the delegation of the United Nations for Climate Change, UNFCCC, and they told me, they were like, I'm very glad that all these local government people is here today. This was in the local leaders forum. They told me that they have been lobbying and trying to get the subnationals in the coming COPs because they want to move away from negotiation and to the action. And they have realized that who is the end organization that ended up doing or implementing the action is the regional or local government, because we are at the front of the line. We implement all what has someone else decided. And they are hoping that there is connection between the subnationals or local governments and the national government. So because when everyone is connected and we work together with the same goal, things work. And that's, it's a common sense, right? But it's not happening in, and I thought that was a challenge just in New Zealand, but it's a challenge for everyone. And especially in US, this is so funny, the poor US delegation, the local government or the mayors from different US citizens, every time that they spoke, they felt the urge to apologize first. It's like, I'm so sorry. Wow. I'm so sorry, I'm from the US. However, that was very interesting. There is a very strong belief that they are pushing back from the national legislation. And some of them, they were like, the national is going in one direction, we are going to another one, which is the right direction. We will just do whatever we feel is right. So there's a lot of NGOs from US and a lot of local governments as well that they're doing great job, despite what the perception that you might have is that because they are from US, right? So it was very nice to see that.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? And it's certainly food for thought. And dare I say it, going into New Zealand politics, it's food for thought here, because since you've been away, the current government not only put out some very substandard methane targets, but they have just in the last couple of days put out very bad news in terms of mitigation targets. So, still sticking with local government focus, how do you see if local government is to become more integral into the COP? And that's what I understood you to be saying. The COP meetings seem to be almost unworkable as they are with, what is it, 190 countries or something. So how would that work if you also said, well, we're also going to bring local government into all of this? Is this like a parallel process that's being discussed where there's a local government COP as well as a national COP, or?
I don't know at this stage. I've just been told that the first 2 days will be the conversation will be focused in local governments. So I feel like the New Zealand delegation or all the delegations of the national level will be empowered to start their relationships with local governments if they don't have it already. I feel that that would be the case. They will be formally told that we are now part of this system, and we are the option for them to achieve whatever they decide. I will be happy to tell you all about it after the first week when I will have some more idea. This is my first COP, so I'm like open and expecting whatever. I'm like, okay, let's see what it will bring.
Wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to you reporting back on that in the near future. Thank you. That's something very interesting. Another local government issue, and again, I'm picking up on a lead that you've given me, and that is the challenge of policy continuity. And it's especially
Yes.
relevant in New Zealand, where we're just less than a month since the last lot of local government elections. And what you wrote to me was a common issue is maintaining policy and strategy continuity when new mayors take office. In some Latin American countries, for example, mayoral re-election isn't permitted, which complicates long-term planning. And in the case of Nelson, as you know, Mayor Nick Smith has been re-elected, so we have continuity in that sense. But it'd be really interesting to for you to unpick this a bit more, particularly if I recall rightly, when we were talking just a few weeks ago, you talked about how a whole lot of actions almost completely stopped when the local government elections took place, and then they were lucky if they even started again. So please go down the well on this with us.
So that's right. I feel very related when this topic was discussed on the round table. Some Latin American countries, as I mentioned, they know they cannot be re-elected. So it's very tricky for a long-term issue as it is climate change to have long-term plans at 15 or 20 years or even targets. I found it really interesting. One Chilean mayor was saying very proudly that when he took the mayoral position, he maintained the policies of the previous mayor, even though it was a different party. So he used that in his advantage to say, I care. I know that that's something that was good, done professionally and very good, and I want to maintain that. And I thought, yeah, that's the way to go, but that's not the case of everyone. So it was interesting for me to see that any policy or even actions that are in the long-term plan that are beyond or in another term, that can be deleted or cancel any time when it's a new government in place. So that's a challenge that will be because it's part of the politics, I guess. So that's it will be discussions how to overcome that, really. Yeah.
And it's a bit of a worry, isn't it, when it becomes newsworthy that a mayor says, I will continue the old policies. It's almost like that is the exception rather than the rule. And that's a seems a
Absolutely.
very unstable thing.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, well, and more discussions to look forward to when you come back. Let's roll on to other issues outside local government, if I may, Daniela, because you've also signaled one or two things. And here's one that I don't know how much it applies to the New Zealand context, but it's certainly one that caught my eye. You talked about NGO funding opportunities. And again, I'm going to read from your note to me. The number of NGOs offering project funding is overwhelming, especially for developing countries. I've also learned, this is you speaking, I've also learned innovative funding strategies for developed cities, such as business taxation and bankable projects, with examples from Portland, USA. Please go down the well on that for us a bit.
Sure. So for developing countries, there are many, many NGOs and philanthropic and organizations that are looking for projects, robust projects that they can contribute. So this is like they were organizing meetings to find each other. These organizations that they were like, we have money to give away. Who wants it or who can apply to this? And it was very interesting because not many councils were ready or they don't have the resources to apply to these fundings because it's not a giveaway without any liability, right? They have to put business cases, they have to put a good proposal. It's not just the idea. And to do that, they have to have the capacity, they have to have the technical skills. And for small councils, they don't. So that was also discussed in the table. And they say the small councils say that was an inequity issue, that just larger councils that had the technical capacity, they were able to apply for this funding. They were the ones that knew how to write business cases, and the smaller were often struggling. But this is where C40 helps as well. And there are other organizations that are not funders, they are not councils, but they are connectors. So they connect people from investors with implementing with local governments that can implement the actions. And the other type of organization that I was fascinated that I learned yesterday is organizations that help with de-risk a project. I won't attempt to explain that, but what I understood it was that projects that are risk itself, they go and help them to de-risk. So they provide, I don't know, insurance, they provide some more structure. So then they are more robust and getting ready to be applying for fundings. So they call these projects a bankable projects. So that's projects that the bank will lend money to because it's a firm business case, it's a concrete action. And that's I thought that was fascinating. So I was very jealous of every developing country getting all these fundings. And I'm like, okay, I'm from a wealthy New Zealand country. I'm like, how do I ask for money to all these guys saying that I'm from New Zealand? And I learned that it's like you don't have to ask for money. You can use taxation. You can tax the business. Well, and I explain, of course, that that's not a political, not my decision. It's probably something that the council and the elected members will need to decide. But there are examples out there that they have done this. And I was really interested to learn more about it. So I got the contacts and I'm going to understand how you can create these financial resources to implement actions. And not just financial resources, but then sometimes loans that you can get at that discounted rate. And I know that in New Zealand we have other sources, but these are international organizations that their work is to help you to produce a bankable project. So I really like that concept and I would love to explore more when I'm back.
Oh, I'd love to know more. And as you were talking, my mind was, I was trying to figure out, are these organizations that are themselves NGOs that provide free support, or is it like in the nature of a consultant that people can pay to help de-risk the project? Or do you know how it works there, Daniela?
I think it's a mix of everything. There were I met consultants, I met organizations that are not for profit. Most of them, as I said, are focused in developing countries, but there are a few that are working with wealthy nations as well. So,
Okay. Can I put an idea out that I'd be very glad if you'd keep your ear open for over the next
okay,
couple of
let's see.
weeks? As you're talking, and it's something that I've encountered before, I think one possible application of funding for the small councils or the poorer ones that don't have the resources is funding that seeds that process. So they get funding to build up or access some expertise to help them apply the next time round. Do you understand what I'm trying to explain there?
Yeah, I think so.
So supposing I was Lindsay Wood City Council and I only had
Okay.
one person there, maybe if I apply for funding for a second person so that we can develop our case for funding the next time around. It's a serious problem across of many sectors, is the people that most need the support find it hardest to apply for it. And there's a paradox in that.
That's right. That's right. And that's why these organizations, they help with submissions. They help to. It's interesting. It's not that there is a lack of ideas. There are so many ideas, so many solutions already there. It's just the structure and the bureaucracy that implies to get to the funding or to the loan or to the financial resources that is difficult for whatever the reason, for lack of resources, for lack of knowledge. But yes, that I found that really interesting.
Very much so. Just before we leave that, earlier in the talk, and then in your note to me about NGO funding, you particularly mentioned Portland in the USA. Is there anything more you want to tell us about what you've learned from Portland, or is it, shall we move on to the next question?
Now, for that one in particular, I like it because I asked them, how do you manage to get, I'm sure it's not popular among the businesses. And she's like, of course not.
Sorry, what is not
That
popular among the.
the businesses is because they are taxed, the businesses of that city that are making, I forgot the threshold, but they put a cap for businesses that earned over, I don't know, $1 million. I'm just putting
Yeah.
a number because I can't remember. Those are the ones that have to pay 1% or 2%. I can't remember the number either.
Right.
That money goes to the council. So the original thought was to provide that money to community groups in the local government so then they could implement actions. What they did to detach the council from that collecting tax, they were working with another company, a third-party company that was collecting the tax, selecting the businesses, collecting the tax, and they have created the fund. So she had no idea which businesses were paying that. So that disconnection or the attachment helped it. The council not to be explaining the businesses. I'm so sorry. I need to charge you now because we are not, you see? So I think that was very smart of them to design
See
it
that?
in that way.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that they didn't take this to elected members to approve. They did a process of voting. So it was the people of Portland that decided that they wanted businesses to provide the tax. So in that way, it was, I think there is a community group put some signatures, collected some signatures, and reached to a point that that was not council decision anymore. It was a vote. So they put like an election, a small
Like a
election, and they
referendum, like a
a
referendum almost.
referendum. That's the right word. Thank you. And that's how they got it, and is in perpetuity. So this is going to happen like from last year till whatever, and they have now a substantial amount of money that they are doing wonderful initiatives. They were showcased by C40 as a great example of they're including solar panels in vulnerable houses. They are doing rainwater tanks. They are doing organic gardens. It's, you name it. It's beautiful.
That is such an interesting process. So fascinating. I can see me Googling that after we've finished this. Thank you.
Happy
I'm
to send
so
you more
glad that you.
information about that.
Yeah, fabulous. And that's really interesting. Okay, moving on. You've also talked, and we've touched on inequity before in terms of how people access funds. You wrote to me saying that resources are unevenly distributed. You've already talked about large councils having the technical capacity to apply for funding. Now, Daniela, we're reaching a close, but just before we do, and we don't really have time for you to answer this, but I know the global goal on adaptation is flagged as one of the issues that is going to be covered at the COP. Can I ask you to have keep your ears out and have a watching brief and report back to us on that another time? Would you be happy to do
I
that?
will. I'm happy to do that.
That
Yes.
would be wonderful. Thank you so much. Now, just by way of closing this time, because I have my fingers crossed, I might have the good fortune to interview you again. But for the moment, looking at COP30 and what an enormous organization it is and event it is, and also how important are the issues, do you have a personal wish for the outcomes of COP? What if you had a dream that this is. This is what I would dream COP would come out with. What would you like to share with us in that way?
Thinking that what I would like to do personally is to bring great initiatives and ideas back to New Zealand that we can implement. And I would like every single local government that is present there to do the same, either bring ideas or bring partnerships and or funders or someone that can help them to achieve the implementation. It's such a big task to do by ourselves, that I think that the multi-DAO, again, the collective effort is key, is essential. And there are so many resources out there, so many wonderful organizations that are willing to help. The vibe is so positive that I think is, yeah, that's my wish, that everyone that is attending the COP will come back to their own countries with a mission for action. So then we can stop conversations and negotiations and start implementation.
Wonderful. What a lovely note to finish on, Daniela. Well, thank you so much again. It's always a great pleasure having a chat with you. And we're very lucky not only to talk with you, but to talk with you when you're immersed in all the COP30 processes in Belem or in Rio at the moment. So I wish you well. I hope we have a chance to talk again while you're there, but maybe immediately after COP. And in any event, I'm not sure how to say goodbye and Portuguese, but goodbye and thank you so much for your time.
I can say boa noite. It's already late for
Thank you.
me, so yes. Thank you for the invite,
Lovely.
Lindsay.
Well, and thank you for staying up. Okay, all the best and do enjoy COP, and we look forward to hearing back from you when the chance is there.
Ciao.
Well, isn't it wonderful to get further insights from Daniela? Aren't we lucky to have her on the ground in Brazil for COP30? Anyway, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I do hope I have your company again next week. Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the Top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz. So thanks again, as always, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.